Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is another podcast of World Wide Way, the international LGBT news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It is indeed World Wide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. A full house in the studio. Welcome, Damien.
Hello.
Good evening, Paul.
Good evening.
Sarah's here on the panel.
Hello.
And I am Matt. Myanmar is a country rich in gems and natural gas, yet most of its people live in poverty. Most of its years of independence have been dominated by ethnic unrest, civil war, and military rule. And amongst all that, it's been fighting HIV since the late 1980s.
How have HIV services fostered the start of a visible LGBTI community?
What is the special spirit role that some trans people play in Myanmar society?
How far away is Myanmar from standing on its own two feet? To share the progress being made in this new democracy, tonight we spend time with Gillian Fletcher, Research Fellow at La Trobe University in the area of international development practice, specialising in Myanmar. Here's a taste of what you've got coming up tonight.
You have these really great situations, actually, in which local people will share with each other about the benefits of each program. So if you go to this program, you get lunch. If you go to this program, you get your expenses paid. But a lot of the prevention work is still focused on telling people condoms prevent HIV and this is how you put a condom on a penis model. And, you know, these people know that very well. I mean, transgender sex workers in Myanmar could put a condom on a penis hanging from the ceiling with a hand tied behind their back. I mean,
we would love
it. It's a great interview. You'll love it.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
And we're starting off over in New York. The UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, on Wednesday warned countries that criminalise homosexuality that they were bucking the trend of history, during the first UN high-level meeting on LGBT rights.
He really has been one of the big advocates of LGBT rights at that international level, and a hard act to follow, I reckon.
The meeting was held on the sidelines of the General Assembly and was attended by the US Vice President Joe Biden, including other leaders of 20 other countries, defending the rights of lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender around the world.
He picked up on anti-gay violence and said it was an outrage that hundreds are killed each year and that millions of people, quote, live their lives in the shadow of discrimination or disapproval.
More than 70 countries still have laws on their books making homosexuality a crime. In his remarks, Biden singled out Egypt, Russia and Uganda for their anti-gay laws, where there was arrests are on a rising. And he also endorsed same-sex marriage, saying that ensuring the rights of lesbians, gay, bisexual and transgender people was the civic right issue of our time.
Gay rights are human rights.
Ban Ki-moon also praised countries that have recognised same-sex couples this year, including Mozambique, Seychelles and Nauru.
And in another breakthrough, the UN Human Rights Council has appointed the first ever independent expert to report on LGBT violations worldwide. And we're going to try and get an interview with them. Across now to the Philippines, where a long-delayed move to extend legal protection to Philippines' LGBT community has got a boost this week because the first ever transgender person elected to the House of Representatives in the Philippines, which is just amazing. Just to be elected, I think, is quite remarkable. Geraldine Roman, she delivered a very emotional speech. That first speech that politicians give is always, you know, one of those heartfelt, futuristic speeches. And she talked about the long-stalled anti-SOGI, Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Discrimination Act, that's been... They've tried to get up in the Philippines, and it it just has never made it to the floor of Parliament. So this is the highest profile push that a transgender person has made in the Philippines so far. Interestingly, Roman is the daughter. She's come from political stock. Is the daughter of a very prominent politician and elected in the same province of her father. And her father died in 2014, so she dedicated the speech to him, which is really nice.
Well, she said how he'd be proud that they treated her like a real human, and they hadn't treated her badly there. So if the law got up, it would criminalise discriminatory hiring, but it would also sensitise police and law enforcement officers on LGBT issues and train them to attend to complaints.
Which is really good, because they've had 164 recorded cases of hate crimes in the last 20 years. Now, in a country that's not known for its LGBT acceptance, that sounds a little bit low to me. So they're going to train the police to look at train the police in what to look for and how to deal with the LGBT community. It will also prohibit discrimination to access to healthcare, and that's particularly important because the Philippines is one of the fastest growing countries in the world for HIV. Particularly in the men who have sex with men section.
Now over to Hong Kong. Two transgender women from Bangkok have been refused access to Hong Kong after immigration officers did not believe they were there to sightsee and shop. So they were.
Is there another reason you go?
I have no idea what else you'd be doing in Hong Kong. They were visiting the city and they were stopped at the border and were asked to sign documents concerning their gender. So basically they just got back on a plane and left.
And didn't spend any money, so... not good news. Better news coming up from Hong Kong, though.
Better news coming from Israel, where gay Israeli families have volunteered to host soldiers during the period of high holidays. And it's not just a few, but hundreds. Gay Israeli families have offered to host lone soldiers over the holiday period to show their sense of kinship with the Israeli army. They're doing this because they identify with being lonely and being sort of, you know, not part of society, and this is their way of kind of backing the soldiers that put their lives on the line.
So it's nothing to do with these buff, young, well-trained men who are alone. And
the Israeli army is male and female.
Oh, true, true, very true.
And Matt, every situation has its pros and cons,
that's,
right?
That's true. It's actually a really nice initiative, really, for and for the gay community to pick it up. In brief, in Hong Kong, we were just mentioning Hong Kong, Pink Dot is on this weekend. There'll be over 10,000 people there. Go Hong Kong.
In Uganda, more than 100 activists attend the 5th annual Pride Parade at a beach on Lake Victoria.
Here in Australia, 149 out of 150 federal electorates now have majority support in favour of same-sex marriage.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Scott from the Equality Network Scotland on the Worldwide Wave.
A message in from 317. Thank you for your message. Refreshing to hear another voice this evening. A rose amongst the thorns.
Thank you.
Are we being called pricks or something? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, nice to be seen. I think that's for me.
This is Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
We are indeed in Myanmar tonight. Now, the criminal code has not caught up with some of the progress we're going to hear about tonight. They still have Section 377, the English penal code.
Yeah, Saints, strike again.
Sodomy. Paul, it's your fault. We're just blaming you.
Again.
Now, interestingly, so they have significant fines and punishment of up to 10 years if you're convicted, but it has been enforced for quite some time. So it's sitting there on the books, but they're not enforcing. That's a
that's the upside.
Tick. That's the upside. There are, however, other sections of laws that police, more outside the capital, police use to, I guess, antagonise or take advantage of the LGBT community. So there's a law around negligently spreading a sexually transmitted disease.
That's fine, because I don't see that being particular to any sexuality.
But how do you prove it's negligent? Like, it's just a way of, oh, you've got an STI, therefore I can have a go at you.
Well, if they do that, they've got to do it to everyone. It's all or nothing.
Oh, but you're using logic here.
I fail again.
There's a public nuisance
law. I get done for that all the time.
I know. Exactly my point.
Public nuisance, private nuisance, just a nuisance.
Obscene material in songs.
Yes, in songs. Why particularly songs? I don't know. There's another one about engaging in any marriage ceremony absent of legal marriage, i.e. if you anything other than a traditional heterosexual marriage.
And my favourite one is Section 5J of the Emergency Provisions Act, which prohibits anything that might affect the morality of an individual, society, or the public in a negative way.
So they basically got everything covered.
That's right.
Like everything covered.
It's like, if I don't like you...
Now, look, there are some positives. As we mentioned, the laws to do with sodomy aren't enforced. There is increasing media freedom. So journalists are now, because they've got that freedom that they didn't have under the military junta, they're out there looking for stories like LGBT stories. So I guess there's starting to be a bit of visibility there.
And despite the illegal nature of homosexuality and gender expression, they're still visible in Burma, particularly in the larger cities like Rangoon.
And we'll hear a lot more about that with our guest tonight.
Joy.
As we've mentioned, Myanmar is a country with many challenges. As one of the poorest countries in the world, it has received significant international funding, particularly to fight HIV. Gillian Fletcher is an expert in international development who has years of experience working in Myanmar. We asked Gillian to explain the role of women in Myanmar society and how that role impacts their sexual health.
It's very interesting, actually, because the government in Myanmar and many Myanmar people will say that gender isn't an issue, that men and women are equal, that they've always been equal. But as in so many countries around the world, if you look at the data, we know that that's not the case. There's lots of traditions, for example, women's sarongs should not be above men's clothes on the washing line.
Huh.
Men should never have to walk underneath a woman's sarong because it's, dirty and there's a risk of contamination. So, you know, there's a lot of traditional beliefs and gender inequalities which are built into the system, but many people in Myanmar actually reject because they think that they have a gender-equal society. I mean, the Minister of Health has previously said to me that there was no issue with gender in Myanmar because he gives his wife all of his salary every month.
Therefore everything's equal.
Exactly. And the reality, of course, is that there are great inequalities. There's high levels of domestic violence. There's a lot of discrimination. And in the sexual health arena, there's a massive double standard, you know, still plays. So although Buddhism is the dominant religion, and under Buddhism, people are supposed to stick to what are called five precepts, and the third of these precepts is no sexual misconduct, which doesn't often get defined what sexual misconduct is, but is commonly understood to mean no sex before marriage, but that's applied much more to young women than it is to young men. And so you have situations where if, for instance, a young couple are having sex before marriage and they're caught, then they'll be forced into marriage, but it's the woman who is shamed more so than the man. And abortion's illegal, so there's a really big problem in terms of young women accessing illegal and unsafe abortion and, you know, some quite serious consequences arising from that. That's all the straight stuff. In terms of what I would call sort of queer Myanmar, it has quite interesting effects in that what we might call butch lesbians are actually given a certain status because they're considered to be more like men. So they're understood to be very good at things like fixing cars or electrician or, you know, selling things. And there's a certain respect and status that comes with that.
Yeah, that's the opposite to a lot of countries where butch lesbians are the particularly reviled ones across Africa. What about transgender people in Myanmar? Are they recognised?
There's a very long tradition of male to female. We would call it transgender. I'm never actually quite sure whether that's an appropriate naming for people in Myanmar, because there really isn't enough research or understanding of people's gender identity. So, for instance, I've met people that we would call transgender who, when they go home to their families, they'll dress as, you know, their birth sex. So they'll kind of move in and out of the space just to maintain relationships. But there's a very big community of what we would call transgender women. Many people that I have spoken to will, for instance, switch. If they're going back to their families, then they'll dress again appropriate with the sex to which they were born, so as not to upset the apple cart too much, and then come back and live the rest of their lives as a point, which means open.
Gillian Fletcher from La Trobe University speaking about the blurred lines of the transgender community in Myanmar. We have lots more from Gillian coming up, including the spirit role undertaken by some trans people in Myanmar. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Hi, this is Tara McDonald and you are listening to Joy 94.9.
And a couple of messages coming in. Thank you, Jade, for that message. We'll get our technical people onto it. The two old poofs. Now, that's their name. That's what they put in the email. I'm not calling them that. No. Well, it could be. I don't know. No. They say, hello. If we travel, and however wrong it may be, then we must respect the laws and customs and religions of the countries that we're going to. However, change through persistence should never be underestimated. It is true, really, isn't it? When you go to another country, we can't project our moral code and the way we live onto them.
This is true. So I guess it pays to be well informed to, when you're travelling abroad, to kind of know where they stand on some issues, because, like,
which is what this show is all about.
Being informed.
And tonight we're informing you about Myanmar.
And on Myanmar, Aung San Suu Kyi has long been a vocal supporter of the fight against HIV. We asked Gillian Fletcher from La Trobe University if the high profile of Aung San Suu Kyi had helped further in fighting HIV in Myanmar.
I don't think there's been any particular change in terms of attention to HIV. I mean, Myanmar has actually had HIV prevention programs running since at least the late 80s, early 90s. There are still issues with pockets of infection, so injecting drug users are one of the most neglected communities. The current movements, the LGBTIQ movements in Myanmar, which are growing, have mainly arisen from HIV work. So, ironically, HIV prevention work created a space in which it was possible to talk about same-sex practices, at least. And from that, some identity groups have arisen. And there's now, they have a festival, they have a film festival every year, and there's a young and emergent queer movement. And I think that you could actually trace that back to HIV prevention. But there's still very big pockets of infection among men who have sex with men. And that's really not shifting very quickly.
So although there's work in this area, the high-risk populations aren't really getting accessed from other people, or it's just not talked about?
They get access. I mean, every HIV prevention program will say that they've got an MSM component. And when I did my PhD on HIV prevention in Myanmar, and you have these really great situations, actually, in which local people will share with each other about the benefits of each program. So if you go to this program, you get lunch. If you go to this program, you get your expenses paid. But a lot of the prevention work is still focused on telling people, you know, condoms prevent HIV, and this is how you put a condom on a penis model. And, you know, these people know that very well. I mean, transgender sex workers in Myanmar could put a condom on a penis hanging from the ceiling with a hand tied behind their back. I mean, it's not about that. It's about other issues.
Myanmar has a huge range of different ethnic groups. So are all the ethnic groups seen within the men who have sex with men community and the lesbian community, or are they separated in some way?
Well, most of the work that I know of with the men who have sex with men, I don't know of any work that's been carried out with the lesbian community because they're not seen as being at risk of HIV. But most of the work that's being carried out with MSM is happening in urban or peri-urban centres. So some of those peri-urban centres might be within an ethnic area, but, you know, most cities are melting pots of all different, you know, migrants and people coming in and going out. So that's not necessarily treated. I mean, as in most countries, people use religion and tradition to criticise or to exclude people of same-sex attraction or of different gender identities. One of the really interesting things in Myanmar, and this is also the case in certain other countries, is that people born men who live as women often perform a role of what's called a nakador, which is the wife of a spirit. And it's in Myanmar, animism and Buddhism are very closely entwined. So nats are animist gods, but most Buddhist people also have nat spirit houses or have some kind of connection to the nats. And the nakador is a spirit guide, basically, and they get paid to perform at ceremonies and to provide certain treatments. And that's a position of respect. And it's very highly structured. Like, you have to do an apprenticeship, you have to go through 5 years of mentorship with a senior nat.
That's really interesting that the transgender women, they're kind of quite an elevated role in society. Would any women get on this? Would the butch women who have a slightly higher role in society be allowed to become one?
No.
Right, it just has
because
to be.
You have to be a wife. So the butchers in Myanmar are, that I know, and you know, things shift and it's different in different areas and all the rest of it, but there's actually still quite a strong butch-femme divide. So the butchers are seen as kind of semi-men.
Is there a lot of violence to sex workers, or do they have some resources to go to? Are they supported by the government at all?
There are some resources, but there's a great deal of violence and it's institutionalised and there's a lot of harassment from the police. Until about, I think, 10 years ago, if a woman was found in possession of a condom, that was evidence of being a sex worker, and that was enough to get her jailed and imprisoned. That changed as part of the HIV prevention efforts, but in some parts of Myanmar still, police will use that as an excuse to bring a woman into the station, and where they'll, you know, they're often raped and abused and they have money extorted from them. It's a very hard life.
Myanmar is still a relatively poor country and has relied on extensive international support. How far away do you think Myanmar is from standing on its own two feet, or is it already there? But as international aid agencies, we think they need more help.
That's a very hard question because what I see, my work in Myanmar now is more with civil society organisations, all sorts of civil society organisations than in the HIV sphere. And what the civil society organisations are seeing is that, yes, there is investment coming into Myanmar, but the way in which that investment is coming in isn't benefiting the poorest and most vulnerable people. And actually, it's causing massive environmental degradation and loss of livelihoods. And so there's a great deal of concern about schemes for dams, for instance, on the Salween River, special economic zones. You know, there's a real concern that the investment that's coming in is going to benefit a small number of people and will leave the poorer people worse off.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
That was Gillian Fletcher from La Trobe University sharing her thoughts on Myanmar's progress and particularly in relation to the support of the international community. It is always that ongoing, at some point, the aim of the international community is to, I guess, help the country
kickstart,
stand. Yeah, kickstart. That's a good way of putting it, actually. To stand on their own two feet. At some point, there's got to be pullback and the international community sometimes has trouble.
Yeah,
as Sarah mentioned in the interview there, that sometimes we want to do too much when we should be saying, no, you do it now. So it's always a fine line, isn't
it? Absolutely. There's a huge history of it and there's a lot written about it in like the New Internationalist and other similarly minded magazines about It's almost like the new colonialism to give help. I mean, where she was talking about the environmental degradation, I think that's dam building, where perhaps isn't ideal for the people to have a dam built. And the same thing goes for health things. We are trying to, with our international aid development, we are trying to give, tell people what to do.
It was interesting, those comments about the HIV training, where not only does a trans sex worker know how to put on a condom from hanging from the ceiling in with one hand, but when the people who go to these courses come together, they talk about which ones refund your money, which ones have good lunches. So have we reached a point where they're not being effective, where they're not doing what they're doing? Gillian talks a bit more coming up about the impact on the LGBT community, so the good side of these HIV programs giving some visibility. But, yeah, it's all, again, are we overdoing it?
And I think also people, I think there's a lot of double standards in all countries about whether or not we have gender inequality as well as sexual inequality. And, yeah, as we've talked before, a lot of things start with gender. So in Myanmar, a lot of people will say there's no problem. There's no gender inequality. And they do actually have the highest number of female researchers. Yeah, they tend to be male, but female as well.
But even those comments about the butch versus femme, butch women are part men, effectively. There's a way they're seen, therefore they're
more valued.
They're more valued. They're considered in higher status.
Especially if they can man the car.
But still, their sarongs could never hang above a man.
No.
On the washing line.
True.
I thought that was an interesting...
That was outrageous.
Small details you don't realise.
Mm.
I didn't. We've heard from some other countries where trans people take this spiritual role, the role of a nat or a spirit wife. I had no idea that there was this apprenticeship and the 5-year mentoring program. Like, it is quite. It's like doing a TAFE course type thing. Well, maybe not quite, but it's quite a process to become a spirit.
Yeah.
Guider.
I guess there's a lot of responsibility.
I did like the point that, well, didn't like, but it was interesting that people were leaving double lives, like they were coming home and changing gender before they stepped through into the family home.
That whole link of respect for your family, therefore I don't want to offend, I don't want to make trouble, I will change myself back and live a second life.
Mm.
Yeah.
And hide.
I'm not into it.
No.
But I guess that's a part of living, especially outside the cities or the city for Myanmar. A message in from 317 again regarding the earlier comment about the rose between two thorns. Absolutely not. You're always insightful. I was referring to gender only. We love having Sarah with us too, to keep us boys in line. We've got lots more coming up on Myanmar. You are on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
Head to joy.org.au for fresh new podcasts. Senator Pauline Hanson makes her first appearance ever on Joy 94.9. Hear Pauline's stance on marriage equality and the plebiscite on Saturday Magazine.
Now, did anybody else, was anybody listening? I was. I heard the interview. And I've got to say, I've had lots of feedback from friends, both really positive that she was on and really negative that she shouldn't be on. So I think, first of all, you should go and listen to the podcast if you haven't.
On to a lighter side, Chris and Cam bring you the best of trash mags, news and gossip from Aussie TV and more on
and
the CNC.
They know trash.
Drive Factory. Oh, you might
I'm
get a message or two about
gossip,
that.
Not the actual trash.
Yeah,
bins.
Just all of the above.
Dan and Andy get in on 90s revival as they dust off the double denim and have a chin wag with Edel Lynch, lead singer of the iconic band Bewitched on Podchops. And Joy celebrates diversity on the big screen and delves into the Emmys this week on Outtakes, Joy's source for all things queer film. Joy podcasts online at joy.org.au and via iTunes.
Hi, this is Patrick Smith, International Mr. Leather on Worldwide Wave.
Couple of messages in. Thank you, Hoffler, who made comment on our show last week. We did Italy and covered the film for Pier Paolo Pasolini. We had so many messages last week. What a popular guy. And in fact, Hoffler says, wow, a cult figure. Loved it. And one also on Indonesia commenting, so the attacks on the LGBT community in Indonesia and the activist Didi Utomo in the spotlight. Williams says they don't want tourists anymore, that's for sure. Bit like persecution. You can actually hear our discussion, our chat with Didi online at our podcast, which is joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Now, tonight we're discovering the complexities of Myanmar culture with Gillian Fletcher from La Trobe Uni. And with so much international development funding over many years, we asked Gillian if she was seeing improvements in Myanmar.
A massive, simple improvement is that people aren't afraid of being arrested for talking about Aung San Suu Kyi. I still remember the first time I was in Myanmar after she'd been released and things were moving forward, and seeing people wearing Aung San Suu Kyi T-shirts, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, that would have been complete anathema before. You know, they'd have been dragged off the streets and shoved in a jail and you wouldn't have seen them again.
As a researcher, would you have to be careful about that also when you're there? Did that change how you can interact with people and talk to people about governmental things?
Not on a one-to-one basis. I mean, if I'm doing an interview with somebody or if we're in a private space, then that's a different scenario. I mean, I think the thing that struck me most is about how important trust is in Myanmar. And if people don't trust you, then you're not going to get anywhere. So you have to be able to build a certain relationship of trust with people before they'll open up a bit. And that has actually changed dramatically. So people will now talk quite openly about politics in public, which they would never have done before.
Would you like to tell us about your current project you're working on in Myanmar?
Yes. At the moment, I have a role as a gender and diversity advisor for an organisation which is called PONKU, which means basically bridge. And although I think gender and diversity is a bit of an oxymoron, it's an attempt to make people more aware of the intersections of different forms of inequality. So the way that, for instance, gender and sexuality work together to reinforce inequality. And then that intersection of that with disability or with poverty or certain, you know, races or religions, all of those things work together to reinforce the vulnerability that a person might experience. It's these intersections of inequality that I find very interesting. So, and, you know, with, as we were saying about, with the fluently open transgender women, if you're a beautician, if you've got the money to enable you to train as a beautician, then actually you can have a very high status. Doesn't mean that your family talks to you, but you will be treated with respect. You'll earn a lot of money. People will queue up. People queue up for the best trans beauticians in Myanmar at their weddings, pay them enormous amounts of money, fly them around the country. If you come from a poorer background, you can't afford that training, maybe you're functionally illiterate, the option open to you is sex work. And once somebody becomes a street-based sex worker, then really they're at the bottom of the pile in terms of stigma and discrimination and vulnerability to violence. In terms of queer issues, there is a growing queer movement, but again, it's very Yangon-based. It's usually, you know, highly educated, middle-class people who understand their rights and are able to engage and campaign for their rights. And, you know, people living out in villages in rural parts of Myanmar are so far from having access to that kind of activism and advocacy. So there's still a lot of work to be done, as there is in Australia, I mean.
Thank you very much for this. This has been a fantastic interview.
Pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
That's Gillian Fletcher, a research fellow at La Trobe University and expert in the area of international development, who specialises in Myanmar. Doesn't she know a heap?
She's been there so long, she knows about everything.
And fascinating looking now at the intersections between inequality. So starting off in, you know, gender and sexuality, but now, look, let's throw in disability. And it's probably something I would think hasn't had at all a profile in Myanmar. So to have an international expert come in and start that conversation, I think that would be quite interesting. Also fascinated, trans beauticians. If you're, that's the line of work to get into, get flown around.
Yeah, sounds very cool.
Exotic?
Exotic, yeah, that's the word.
But your family won't speak to you. So it comes back to that respect issue, or, you know, the family not want the family reputation not wanting to be seen.
And you've also got to come from a middle class family if you haven't got money to start with, then you're going to end up probably as a sex worker, unfortunately.
Which is bottom of the food chain. Message in, fascinating sociological case here. Very interesting interview. I thought so too. Well done, Sarah. Great interview.
Oh, Gillian was a great interviewee. I think she's got lots more to tell us.
And another one from the USA, Angel. Thank you, Angel, for likes the interview as well. This is World Wide Wave, your international news and current affairs show for the LGBT community on Joy 94.9.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Max from Amnesty International speaking from Ukraine on the World Wide Wave.
And we really did enjoy that interview tonight. It's Gillian Fletcher, who is with La Trobe University and an expert in international development specialising in Myanmar. And Sarah, congratulations on the interview. You can find out more about the work that Gillian does at latrobe.edu.au/social change.
And a big thank you to all those that have messaged us in tonight. 317, as always, we appreciate your comment. And also from
the two old poofs. And, thanks, guys.
And Jade as well.
We'd also like to thank our podcaster. Don't forget you can download our podcast from joy.org.au.
Yes. /worldwide.
And also, I'd like to thank Front Desk.
And on Facebook, Helen Sassi, Claire, Mel, Rex, they've all been interacting with us on Facebook. We've actually just posted a video we found, which was a little news clip on the LGBT community in Myanmar posted in the last year. So go to W3Joy on Facebook and you can have a read of that one.
We've got some more music to go out with. Following the theme of covers, this one is Tainted Love by Soft Cell.
I love this song.
Would you believe it was actually a cover of a 1965 song?
Oh, wow.
By Gloria Jones.
Cool. We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave. Sometimes
I feel I've got to... Thanks for listening to another podcast of World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 Eastern Australia time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.